Priya, this can drip into the story maybe as well. Well, again, I'm inspired by game theory this time, episode 20, where he talks about secret societies and the occult, which may sound like, wow, far out there, way out there. But, you know, he's Chinese and he's looking at the world from there, and he's not bound by the same, biases and so on that we have here. So, are there secret societies ruling the world? Or am I now a conspiracy theorist? I find this word, conspiracy theory, kind of funny, but also very obviously used to just make people not look in a certain direction. Of course there are secret societies, and secret in the sense of not anyone knowing that they exist. Of course we don't know. But in the sense of societies which are kind of discreet and not very, you know, out there, open to look into, but which obviously do exist, even by their own admission. They, of course, are there. I mean, you even have, I don't know if you want to call them secret, but, you know, you have the Freemasons, you have the Lions, you have the Rosencruz, whatever they're called. You have all these small or big, some are big, kind of, you could call them occult, because they are the little we know about them, they're often discussing different kinds of wisdom and occult things, not in the sense of everything, wow, we saw way up there and the la-la land of mysticism, but kind of trying to understand the world more on a deeper level, the behind the scenes, so to speak, which is really what mysticism is about as well. But now that sounds just mystical. Speculations and dreamy stuff, but it's really about digging deeper into the factors that make up the world we find around us. It's about the consciousness behind it, the understanding of how the world works actually, on a deeper level, and of course then the understanding that it's really about consciousness. And it's really about creating a certain consciousness in the world, a certain idea, worldview, understanding of the world, and which then people will act according to, and thus create a society according to. So, now if we look at spiritual societies, as they are called, and call themselves often. Oh, well, you have religious societies, secret societies as well. But if we should look at it in a positive, creative, benign sense here, because it doesn't mean that they are, you know, tailoring nefarious, sinister plans for taking over the world. I could look at something like ISKCON, for instance, or what ISKCON could be, and I would say it was meant to be, and still, of course, can become. Or at least that the Vaishnavas, the learned ones, the wise ones, can, and I would say should, do and develop is, and I mean, it used to be secret because the Brahmanas and the, you know, the wise ones, they were, there together, and not, you know, allowing just anyone to study those scriptures, which are esoteric and occult in the Western language. But I will say today, doing that which those secret societies do, which then generally consist of the rich and powerful, but why not do it openly? And those who are supposed to and are able to and naturally drawn to understanding that level and dealing on that level will then and can then have access to that. It's not a secret society in the sense of us, a few here, trying to rule the world, and we have to do it in secret so people don't understand what we're actually doing. But, you know, analyzing and understanding and envisioning also the world, you know, how are things, what's actually going on here, and how should I act, how should I understand my own situation in all of this? What is life? What is the world? What is a society? How should a human society work? What is the well-functioning human society? And then we talk about Dharma and so on. So I would say that such a spiritual, transcendental, you know, that kind of whatever it's called, movement should serve such a purpose and step out of this secret zone. I'm getting convinced that it should open the doors from the closed chambers. They're not needed anymore, because anyway, people can find the information, you know, all these soul scriptures and everything mystical and esoteric and occult and whatever out there on the internet. So I think it should be there so that the people who are actually intelligent, who are actually able to understand this and work on that level, can find it and find each other, no matter where they are on the planet, rather than just, you know, a few being invited by the others who then make sure that they are on the same agenda, you know, same playing field that they are. Anyway, I'll continue. So anyway, he likens, I mean Jung here, this to like a, you have a river where there are all these streams going this way, that way, but if you understand it, you are able to cross safely. So this, you know, this occult level, what you would call it, is there to understand much the way he does, the underlying principles and movements and the what may seem like chaos, and bring order to it, or find the order in it and how to use it. And he says that what happens is it's like a story that they can develop. This is a story. This is what's going on. And this is where it's leading at, where it should lead at, and where we want to lead at. And that's the thing. You develop that story, and then you disseminate that story into the society, among the people, who then share that story. And that's the way it goes. And that is built often from top down through the leaders and so on. And that's how it works out there among the secret societies. Which may not be more dramatic or esoteric or strange than, you know, just meeting behind closed doors now and then, which is going on, of course. So if we translate this to the Sankirtan mission, how should I say it? It's also about finding the story, finding the you know, the proper understanding of the world and how to do it, where to go, what works, what doesn't. And build that story. And that's the thing. Like, I'm making a story. I'm writing a story. And people like stories. And people need stories. They need to feel that I'm part of this greater story, which is, there's a meaning to it, it's useful, it's leading towards something good, not towards disaster and misery and destruction of the earth, the end of the world. So therefore I would say that those who are carrying the Sankirtan mission, they have that responsibility on their shoulders. To gather and make that understanding, that analysis clear, based on the principles of Sanatana Dharma and so on, and having, Because unless there is someone or some up there who are really extremely learned and able, then just stay where we are. Here we are, and we are trying to learn by doing it. We are discussing together here. We are, yeah, this sounds right. We agree on that. And there should be like an open forum where discussions go and where each one can make up her or his own opinion and understanding, and not just some top-down, you know, worship the leader and the wise leaders here, religious leader, whatever, and just believe whatever they say. But a dynamic, open, ongoing work where you basically take that which is going on more in closed, you know, behind closed doors in secret societies on that occult level, as he calls it, and making it available to those who feel interested in that, who feel drawn to that. I think that something like that is what we should be talking about here. So yeah, before we move on here, I mean, he's looking at this, again, I'm staying with Jiang here. You got the Empire. He takes this example from the world today. And they are the game masters, the finance people, the people who are possessing the powerful means there, which start with money. And then on the next level, there you have the global economy. And the next one, you have the rules-based international order. And the next level, you have culture, education, and so on, to kind of indoctrinate people into following this system. And so this is kind of an implementation of, an, you know, how this, what comes there from the occult level, quote-unquote, how it spreads out into forming and maintaining a certain society that people live in. And then we have science, crime, and intelligence, which he has spoken about before, which kind of control the system but also draw benefits from it. He calls them parasitic. I'm not sure exactly how they are right now, but anyway, just some thoughts here. This is becoming more about this game theory 20. he's talking about China as a mirage, which is interesting. He's Chinese and he lives in China, saying that if the global economy collapses, then China is in a big trouble, because it's not an alternative to this global order. It's part of it. And well, it kind of makes sense, because they are now building up their fantastic society very much by technology and money. So if I should look at it now, from trying to analyze it from my point of view here, I mean, these big civilizations, this empire that we can call it, quote unquote, we can see them all as part of some empire, or they're trying to make their own empire, but the principle, it's falling, it's crumbling, it's in trouble. And they may kill each other, those empires. So what to do? Now, some say there's nothing we can do. We just sit here and let our destiny unfold. But when you think about it, you know, you have these big empires with their big money and their big control systems and their fancy technology, are they needed really? Again, I'm back to my little hometown where I grew up, being a child or young and not knowing that much. I was a teenager when I moved away, but at least I can see, and of course it's an historical fact, that people, you know, in those days, back in the days, I'm talking 60s, well, I was around in the 50s even. And I learned from my parents and so on. We were more locally self-sufficient. The town and the villages around the town, the countryside where the farmers lived, it was still fairly much a living countryside back then, which was in rapid decline and had been so for like 50 years at least back then. But you could still see it. And if you now walk around in Skansen, you know, this outdoor museum in Stockholm, it was like that where I walked around when I was a kid outside of town. So anyway, when you think about it, it's very simple. We humans, we need a place to live. We need food. We need clothes on our bodies. We need water, air. And that's basically it. And then we want to have fun and do the things we like to do. But to have a working society, you don't need more than that, and you can have it locally. So if the whole big empire is there, over there and over there, crumbling and falling, the wisest thing to do for us, and there is a lot we can do, is to get together on that local level. Make a farm community. Make a little village. Move together, people of the same feather. And just, you see, and you can do it without buying anything from the big corporations or the big industries. And that's what people did in the past. And it's not that difficult even to learn how to do it. You can build your village from wood in the forest. You can power it with energy. First of all, you don't need that much energy. What energy did people use then? Well, bulls and horses and human power. You know, they used to work with their bodies, not using machines. And today we think that's primitive, but see, it's sustainable and it makes you strong and healthy. And you don't need that very much energy. And then you make something, you know, candles and oils, and you can have light in your home. You chop wood. And get fire to cook food on. That has been sustainable for hundreds and thousands of years, and still is. Mother Nature is here giving us everything we need that we can pick up locally. You can grow your linen and your sheep and get wool and cloth to make clothes. So I would say that this is probably something we should look more and more at and be more and more prepared for. I mean, even if the whole big empire doesn't crash, it's good to know these things. It's good to learn to live that way. And then he discusses the, what is it called, Pentagon Hollywood, or Hollywood Pentagon. You know, yeah, the Hollywood Pentagon complex. And what it means with that is referring to a previous episode. How Hollywood and Pentagon started working together. And, you know, thousands of, or more than a thousand of Hollywood movies, war-related, have been produced under the supervision of Pentagon, of the military, which has led to, you know, we have a president now sitting there watching movies instead of reading in serious knowledge about how to run a military or whatever. Losing connection with reality. And this is what is happening now, that people sit in little bubbles where they are seeing a constructed, either by themselves, by their own dreams, or by someone else who has given that to them, illusory realities about what the world is and how things are and what the future will be. And that kind of becomes, yeah, their reality. And then, you know, this is say those people sitting in the secret societies, or, you know, whatever you want to call them, these people behind closed doors, the rich and the powerful and so on, they are in their bubble. And they are living there. Imagined. And imagine can also mean that you first imagine and then you implement it with your money or power. So, but on that level. So there are these bubbles. Now, question is, which bubble is the right one? Who is right? Who has the truth? There are the religious bubbles, this and that, political. So then, of course, it becomes a matter of, first of all, getting out of the bubble, because bubble means you're insulated a bit, you're limited, your view upon the world and life and all that is enclosed inside some kind of a bubble. So stepping out and seeing the world objectively, if you can even use that word today, but I mean, and we're talking about Dharma and these teachings, the universal knowledge that is really there and which actually helps us to see the world and life, including our own private lives, for real, in the bigger, full perspective. That is very valuable. So that's what is needed today, not another bubble with another mythological worldview inside it, but one that corresponds to reality. So as he says here, it's much easier for a person to live in his own bubble.
And to be delusional
than to step out of that and be objective.